Hi, this is David McQueen, and welcome to the David McQueen Podcast.
Pleasure to have you, Michael, and I'm going to start with the first question I ask all my guests. And again, I can see you on video, we can see you on video, but they're only going to be hearing you on audio. So what did you have for breakfast?
Well, first of all, thank you very much, David, for inviting me onto your incredible podcast. I've been a massive fan. So what did I have for breakfast? I had two beef patties and two poached eggs with 30 almond nuts. That's what I have for breakfast this morning.
That's so precise. First, tell me about the almond nuts, because I'm curious now.
Well, lockdown hasn't been kind to me, David, from a weight standpoint. So I have now sort of signed up to a fitness coach who's sorted out my nutrition. And whilst I joke about this, you know, lockdown for a variety of reasons was exceptionally difficult. And we can talk about George Floyd. We can talk about not being able. I lived with my wife is high risk. So for 2 years, did not see anybody physically for 2 years.
Right? Yeah.
And fortunately, my wife and I like each other. So that's great.
Yes.
But also from a wellness standpoint, you know, not seeing people, business going up and down, lots of volatility from that standpoint, wasn't as active. And I gained a considerable amount of weight. Some of your listeners may not have heard this, but before we jumped on air, I normally have a beard and I've had a beard for the last 2 years. And I shaved it off 2 weeks ago because I knew what was hiding underneath. And what was hiding underneath was maybe two or three extra trims.
Storage.
Yeah, but fortunately, your listeners can't hear this, but it's one where it's about accountability. It was literally a case of cutting the beard off and realizing what I needed to get done.
Okay.
So again, with the diet, it's part of a health kick.
Yeah.
I'm training now. And again, physically, mentally, it's really important to be in tune and actually invest in myself, which I actually haven't done for quite some time.
Okay, understand that. As a quick aside, before I go to my next question, last week I went and I had a 360 assessment, as they call it, a full body check at Nuffield, where they check your blood pressure, your lung function, cardiology, prostate.
Private healthcare.
Yeah.
Go on, David.
Listen, man, I work too hard not to play with this, you know, not to play. And what was quite interesting is I went on the scale and the guy said to me, you know, how much do you think you weigh? So I'm like, pre-pandemic now, I'm like, yeah, 13 and a half stone. He goes, yeah, it's more like 15, mate. I was like, okay, where did that come from? So I totally hear you, man. And I think, you know, as I say, health is wealth, right? Health is wealth. So
what have you done since that health kick then, health check that you had at Nuffield?
So they've advised me to limit some stuff into my diet, so taking out processed foods.
Yep.
I'm doing or having a lot. They've recommended a Mediterranean diet, which is more fish based, and I already have like really rich oils and like olive oils and stuff like that in my diet. Mm-hmm. But just making sure that I cut out any processed foods or extra sugars. And I'm like, okay, you know what? If that's what maintains a really good healthy living, and again, leadership for me is all about leading by example, right?
There you go.
Definitely on it, man. Definitely on it. So talk to me about how you got into your leadership journey. And I mean, by all means, just tell people a bit more about who you are in doing that as well.
Sure. That's a great question. So I am the chief executive officer of Barons and Hibbert Associates. There are three components to our business. The first pillar is executive search. So we place good people across financial and professional services in Europe and also North America. And as a side note, we're the longest established black-owned executive search firm in Europe. Wow. We're 12 years of age. The second theme of our business is leadership and development. And again, we complement some of the fantastic work that you do, but we work with emerging talent within financial services and professional services around authenticity, but also we've been doing an awful lot of work with senior leadership mm-hmm. around inclusivity and belonging. And that's been a big part of our business over the last 18 months or so. And the final strand of our business is diversity. So given I don't know when this comes out, but we're 2 years to the day of George Floyd's murder, there's been a huge amount of work which has come into my organization around listen and learn sessions where we've spent time not just with Black employees understanding their lived experience at some organizations and feeding it back to senior leadership, but we've had the privilege and honor to actually work with boards at some of the leading FTSE 100 companies who've actually put their hand up and said, look, Michael, Barons and Hibbert Associates, we need some help. Can you help us be set up for success to be able to understand this challenge and be able to move forward? So we've been very fortunate from that standpoint. Now, your question was, how did my leadership journey start? And with any start, there's a beginning, right? So I think it's important that the first leader that I got exposure from, David, I want to sort of talk about some of her strengths that I saw as a leader. So this leader was able to shape a vision using pictures. This person was a situational type of leader. So you've got some leaders like Sir Winston Churchill, when there's a moment of crisis, the nation went to Sir Winston Churchill because he was a visionary and he could bring a sense of belonging to people and take them forward. Okay, but when it became peacetime, they disposed of him. But this leader was able to do both in terms of managing the crisis, but also business as usual. This leader lost their co-founder, okay, in this organization. So a big part of the balance sheet and equity and investment was taken away, but this leader stayed the course and inspired their team. They looked at succession planning, they looked at coaching, and they really fostered belief. That leader was my mum. I grew up in a single parent household, my brother and I, an absentee father who made one child payment before deciding to step away from his responsibility. And my mum as a leader, she hustled. She didn't have the financial well means, but then she started to sell party products on the side, have event planning at the house when my brother and I were at home. She then bought our house. She educated us. That for me was my first example of transformational leadership. So that's how my journey started 42 years ago, of seeing that leadership from my mum. And what's really interesting, as I've gone through my journey, both from playing sports, so some of your listeners may not know, I played professional football for 6 years at a reasonable level. And each great manager, so Rue Gullit, Glenn Hoddle, had some really fantastic coaches. They all demonstrated characteristics that I had already seen from my mother.
Yeah.
So in terms of that journey, I've been able to utilize the foundations that my mother has presented from a leader, from what I've gained in sports, which has then also set me up in the business context as well.
Fabulous, fabulous. I love that. I love that. And because it's so easy. And I've had this from a number of guests, actually, where they've really highlighted families. But it's so easy for individuals to think that leadership has just got to be to somebody in an organization or a company. Often we learn those really, really good traits and those really good examples of leadership for our family. So thank you for sharing that with us as well. Thank you. I really appreciate that. Outside of mum, and mum obviously is this a powerful starter of what you could build on. Do you have any other leadership role models that you specifically look to?
So I'll use a real life example, of course. So the first leader that, from a business context, that really invested in me is the CEO of Odgers Berntsen, a gentleman called Kester Scroop, who's completely opposite to me. I think he is related to the Duke of York from many, many years ago. But Kester gave me a chance, okay? So I was this kid from Wembley, working class, a little bit rough around the edges, but he saw potential. He saw potential and he gave me the opportunity to join Odgers Berntsen, which is a preeminent executive search firm, and gave me a leadership position to run the financial services practice in London. Now, what his leadership gave me, David, he gave me sponsorship. He gave me resources. He gave me focus. And what he did, he gave me air cover. So I would only see him once a week for half an hour. But what he would do, he would, this man who's complete different end of the social spectrum to me, we will sit down and we'll talk about family. He'll talk about his kids, his wife. He'll see how my wife Zoe and my kids, who were very young at the time, were doing. And he said, look, Michael, do you need anything for me? And if I asked a question and I said yes, he would make it happen. Now, you've mentioned something about people's childhoods and how it impacts them potentially in their leadership role. My father was terrible with breaking promises. So if someone breaks a promise to me, even now, David, even now, and my counselor will tell me, well done for speaking about it. If someone lets me down, that's a massive trigger.
Yeah.
This CEO never let me down. If I needed time, if I needed support, if I needed air cover, this CEO done that for me. So for me, he was an absolute role model in terms of leader that I could have needed at that time. And there's someone who's a dear friend and mentor to me who took a chance on somebody 17 years ago. And that's basically put me in the position that I am today.
I love that. I love that. So here's something then. Here's something I'm going to throw into you. I love that example. You ready?
Go ahead.
I grew up in Sunbury Hill.
Wow. That's a posh part of town. I wish. Oh, man. I wish I could have made it uptown. Sunbury Hill.
Yes, so I bet you, I was born in St. Mary's. I lived in Harsden, well, Stonebridge, for 10 years. And then we moved to Sunbury Hill. And I lived in Sunbury Hill until I was 25.
Is that the Vale Farm, Sunbury Hill? Okay.
Yeah. So we were within spitting distance, mate.
So to David's listeners, Sunbury Hill is posh. So whenever David's talking about I'm from the hood, so Sunbury Hill is where John Barnes used to live, right? When he came over from Jamaica. There you go. I've exposed your secret, posh boy. No, I'm joking.
Oh, my goodness. No one believes it. If I say to somebody, I actually went to a school once and I said to some, the kids were like, so are you from the hood? And I said, well, I could have been. They said, not with that voice, you're not. I was like, all right, then I'm done. I'll move it. So I love that the concept of somebody taking a chance on you and seeing you for who you are, regardless of your background, regardless of where you came from and your class, he was there to be able to see that for you. Mm-hmm. So I guess it you saw that from someone else. So what does good leadership look like for you? What does it look like for you, or how do you demonstrate it?
So I think there's, and again, really great question. What I've acknowledged, David, is there's no such thing as a complete leader.
Mm.
Okay. Mm. And I have failed disastrously in my leadership journey. I've failed every single day. Certainly when I set up the business, I try to be like all things to all people. So like Daley Thompson or Dame Anna, Jessica Ennis, in terms of a heptathlon, you know, trying to be good in all the disciplines.
Yeah.
Okay. So from marketing to sales to all those components. And I realized potentially to be a great leader, and that's from my perspective, that I really focus on my strengths.
Yeah.
So again, it's like me being a strong soccer player, a great striker, and then having to pivot to be a ballet dancer.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be a great ballet dancer as much as I spend those times on those areas of weakness around flexibility, suppleness, etc. I'm just not going to be an elite ballerina. So good leadership for me is where I've identified my blind spots. I've accepted them as much as they hurt me. Mm. I've now been in a situation where I can hire people in my organization who are better than me in those disciplines or better than me in general. Mm. So what that's enabled me to do is focus on inspiration, focus, and reinforcement. Okay, in terms of a leader, and allow others around me to focus on the blind spots that I have to enable them to be able to have their own lane and take ownership. So that's taken time, that's taken maturity, that's taken losing some fantastic people because I couldn't see it. I couldn't see and understand. I'll give you an example. I think examples work better.
Yeah.
I would get into the office, even when I was at Odgers or my own company, and I'll be the first at the desk at 7 a.m. 7 a.m. Just relentless. 7 a.m. and I'll be the last to leave.
Okay.
I would make sure. So my at the stage of the evolution of the business, it was one where I thought I should just lead by example. And what that meant was, you know, the amount of calls that were made that day, how many meetings, I was the one leading the way.
Yeah.
And what that did, that absolutely disempowered some of my sales guys.
Yes.
Because they're looking and thinking, well, you've got X amount of years experience, you've got a black book, you've got the contacts. Can you not invest, that time into us? To enable us to get to that sort of level.
Yeah.
And it was only when I kept losing people, I'm like, why can't they just do what I do?
Mm.
And that's where that sort of pivot started to come of actually, I've got to take people on a journey.
Yeah. It's interesting you mention that because very often when I mention inclusive leadership to some of the senior teams that I work with, the phrase I always use or the term I always use is that you're both attracting, hiring, and retaining staff without marginalizing them. That's what it looks like. So what are the behaviors and the practices that you have in your culture that doesn't marginalize your staff? So again, to your point, if you come in and you're working those mad hours, people are like, well, that's what I need to do. If I can't match Michael's relentless, if I come in at 5 to 7 and leave at 5 past 11, that's the only way I can match it, as opposed to staying in their own lane and doing what they do really well.
Mm.
So it's powerful to hear you talk about that in terms of the actual story, because a lot of leaders don't realize that, as you said, until it's too late or until you start losing talent.
I think the hardest thing for me, David, is I lost a very, very good friend that I worked with for a number of years as a consequence of that. And this person gave me the truth, and you understand what I mean, right? Just the truth, constantly the truth. And it was too late, you know, it was too late, to remedy the situation. when I've lost a great friend, you know, who's a value carrier, cultural carrier, and had the best interests of the organization. And I'm hoping that whether it's any entrepreneurs listening to this or any execs, that they don't have to lose somebody who's as critical to the mission of the organization as possible. So if I did not learn from that moment, David, there's no hope.
Yeah.
There's no hope for me then.
Yeah, totally, 100%. So I guess that leads to my next question. What was the toughest decision that you've had to make as a leader?
It was having to close a business down within Barrington Hibbert Associates and the aforementioned individuals impacted. Again, the beginning of my story is all about trust. It's about, family, right? So a lot of the decisions that I was making around supporting an underperforming business was because I had a fiduciary responsibility to not just people that I brought into the organization, but also their families, their kids. And what was fundamentally happening, I was supporting an underperforming business personally from a financial standpoint for 2 or 3 years. And it got to the start of the pandemic. And because there wasn't a well which would support that business for another 6 months, I had to make a difficult decision to close that part of the business down. Now, I think what's really important from a context standpoint is, what was it? Ego. I'm just trying to think about ego. So before every great fall, there's ego. Ego, put ego before fall. I'm not sure what the correct terminology is. But what I learned from that is that my ego thought that I would be able to ride it out and keep funding this business and keep these people together. And then the fall came. Now, for me, that was the toughest decision I had to make by letting people that I've met their families, they've met mine, they've come to my house, and letting them go. Now, the business case, so this is where my weakness is that the business case, they knew that the business had been underperforming. And the reason they stayed was because of me. It wasn't because they could see the writing on the wall, but they kept getting paid. They wanted to try and turn it round. But when I sat down with them and said, look, I can't fund this anymore. And they said, we understand. We understand, you know, the market conditions or whatever it may be, haven't enabled this product to sell as effectively as it can. And I made a pact to myself 19 months ago, 20 months ago, is I had to deal with conflict. I had to deal with bad messaging because you can't always be glass half full. You can't always be inspirational. You have to give people the truth. And that's something that I will take away with me. So that was a difficult, most hardest decision that I've had to make. But conversely, it had a profound impact on me in terms of, you know, people that I'm hiring now, decisions that I'm making, investments that I'm making, which I've made into different businesses. It's more through a more ruthless and critical lens.
Okay. Sometimes people are afraid of talking about that, but I'm glad you're in that space where, you know, you can be really honest, again, as you said, and you say it as it is, rather than trying to make it sound like it's all, you know, magic rainbows and lovely roses, when sometimes it can be really challenging. So
David, the life of an entrepreneur, business leader, is tough.
Yes.
And again, being a entrepreneur, business leader, when you're black and 6'3" and 20 odd stone, is equally challenging, right? Yeah. And when you're from a lower social economic background, it's equally challenging.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm making some assumptions, but you know, these are challenges that we go through every single day.
Yes.
So I want to stress to the listeners, and I've spoken to many entrepreneurs. I think it's really important to share your truth.
Yeah.
it's really important to share my truth. I deal with challenges every single day, both mentally, from a well-being standpoint, from an imposter syndrome standpoint. At times, it always happens. But again, I'm thankful for the opportunities that I have. I'm always resetting myself. But what made a big difference for me, David, from a wellness standpoint, I speak to someone. I've got a coach who can talk to me and give me honest feedback, and I can share some of the vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the biggest takeaways. That's the biggest game changer, where you can sort of share your innermost thoughts with someone who understands you. And I think that's a really big component that I would say that every leader should have, is have a coach, yeah, like David McQueen.
It is an incredible responsibility. And I will say, as a coach, I also have a therapist, right? Because I believe I'm not going to go out there and tell people how to do things unless I've dealt and walked my own journey. And I agree. I actually have this saying that there is you and I will have come from a similar background where we were told to, because our parents didn't know any different, they told us to keep our heads down, work hard, work twice as hard for half as much, right? Which always struck me as really bad maths, right? I don't see why I have to work twice as hard, but that was in context, that was their experience. But I always say to a generation of leaders that have come on behind me, I said, not only do you work hard, and by the way, you don't need to work twice as hard as anyone else. You just need to work as hard as you work. That's got to be important. You've got to know what your lane is. I also say that you need to work smart. So what are the points that you made before? Yes, we can go in and we can do everything. We can be the sales, the marketing, but we don't necessarily need to do that. Who can we bring on board that we can leverage and that can work on our behalf? The third one is read the room, understand power dynamics, and understand how choices and decisions are made, how we manage conflict, how we fight some battles but walk away from other ones. And then the fourth one is really about building that network. And for me, that bit that you mentioned there, I have a thing about a personal advisory board. We should always have a personal advisory board, mentors, friends, yes, coaches, mm-hmm, individuals that we can bounce off, that tell us the truth, that aren't afraid, right? We don't need people around us who are fearful of us. And again, right, as 6'2" and 6'3" brothers, right, we can go into spaces and people are afraid even before we open our mouth. Mm-hmm. But to surround ourselves with individuals who are not afraid to go, that's wrong. That's crap. That's not the direction you want to go. And for me, it's priceless. So to hear you say that kind of in many ways just validates a lot of those messages that I have when I know I'm on a stage and when I'm talking to individuals, young leaders and older ones as well. Like, you know, you really need to be surrounded by individuals who are not afraid to challenge you, but to challenge you for the better. You know, no one's out here to, anybody can cuss you, right? We know that. We know how we grew up, right? Anybody can cuss you, but being able to have someone who will say to you, all right, in order to level up, you need to drop this and you need to pick up that. That's powerful.
And it is. And I think that the barometer is, David, when the going is tough, that's when your real authentic network is there for you.
Yes.
Okay. And with any business, it ebbs and flows, ebbs and flows, and friends will come and go.
Yeah.
But what I will say to, and I've had some dark times as a leader, as a business leader. There's been some really dark times. And, you know, fortunately, over the last couple of years, there's been some massive wins, some massive accolades. But the people who were with me when the bad times were tough, that I would call at 7 o'clock in the morning when I'm at my desk and ask for help and share my vulnerabilities, are still with me. And don't get me wrong, I've added one or two on the way.
Yes.
But, you know, those core groups of people that I was able to say as a leader, hey, listen, can you lend me 20 grand until next week? Because I've got payroll.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got payroll and I'm not getting, and this is like pre-pandemic, early pandemic stage when things were really difficult. And people said, I've got you. I've got you.
Yeah.
So for me, that is, you know, really critical. And I really want to make sure that your listeners make sure they continue to pay it forward. So I was speaking to someone who helped me, and I know this is about leadership, but I'm just trying to share some of my journey. I was speaking to someone who helped me a couple of years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. And I just said, look, you know, I always keep saying thank you, thank you, thank you. And he's like, look, you don't need to say thank you because I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing with 10,000 black interns. I see what you're doing with the Social Economic Diversity Task Force. I see what you're doing with X, Y, and Z. And that's our legacy, right? In the sense of we've got to keep paying it forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk to me about the social economic one, because I know 10,000 black interns. Actually, speak on both of them. So you've obviously got Barrington Hibbert, which is the executive search, the leadership development and the diversity arm. Okay, we know that we're part of that. Talk to me about 10,000 black interns and the Social Economic Diversity Forum.
Yeah, cool. So, okay. So with 10,000 black interns, it was an initial idea by my co-founder Jonathan Sorrell, who is the president of Capstone, which is an investment management firm. Wal Collade, who's the managing partner of Living Bridge, and Dawid, who is the CEO of Reddington. Yeah. Now, the reason this was initially set up is that we wanted to organize a dinner for black portfolio managers. So portfolio managers are those that run our money, so our pensions at Aviva, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And when we started to put all the names together, David, we could only find 10 to 11 black portfolio managers in the city. And to give you some context, in the United Kingdom, there's maybe 8,000 to 9,000 portfolio managers across the industry, and we could only find 10 or 11. So then we started thinking about, well, what's the pathway? What's the access? What's the opportunity? Where are organizations hiring from? And it was predominantly Oxbridge, the Red Brick universities. And if you look at Oxbridge, and you look at the Afro-Caribbeans, Africans studying engineering or maths, it equates to, you know, 0.5% of the student undergraduate population. So there's a supply problem. But you and I know that there are some fantastic black students in the United Kingdom who, like me, maybe didn't have access to going to an elite university. So that's how 10,000 black interns was formed. So initially, we thought it was initially called 100 black interns. So the plan was to get 100 internships signed up. Yes. And we were so fortunate that the industry got behind us. The first year, we had 212 firms sign up, and we placed about 500 interns in 2021. And they were all paid internships. And that was a critical piece for us, is that we wanted to give access to all eligible black students paid employment into client-facing roles for the most part. Now, as a consequence, it was so overprescribed that we had so many organizations from Google to Facebook to Man United all wanted to get involved in this initiative. And we were delighted to roll it out across 24 industry verticals, and now are placing 2,000 interns each summer with the view of hopefully in 3 years' time to get to that magical 10,000 mark. So again, that's a fantastic opportunity. And I must stress that it's open to kids going to Portsmouth studying arts or going to Lincoln University. It's about access for all and giving them a foot on the ladder from an internship perspective, and whether or not they go into the investment management industry, whether they go into sports or anything like that, it's a fantastic initiative, which has given our community hopefully a lot more opportunities than they had before.
And that's a reflection of, I was going to say, that's a reflection of your desire to recognize where you've come from and give an opportunity for others to be in that space as well. Is that correct?
100%. And what some people, and I haven't really shared this story very often, but this sort of links to the diversity, Social Economic Diversity Task Force that I'm on. Okay. When I mentioned to your listeners that I played football and stopped playing at the age of 21, And I was given the opportunity to go to the States. So after I stopped playing for Chelsea, Birmingham City and some other clubs, I had to move back home, give up the house, give up the fancy BMW 3 Series convertible, had to give that away and move back into the box from that I grew up. Mm-hmm. And I was given a fantastic opportunity to go to the States for 2 years in North Carolina on a partial sports scholarship. And after the first 2 years, I was given the opportunity to transfer to Yale University to work with a black British coach from Luton called Brian Tomkinson. Mm. And at that time, I had the grades to transfer. And I couldn't pass clearing. I did pass clearing. However, the caveat was, in order to take a place at Yale University as an international student, you would need to show $50,000 in a bank account in order to take that place.
Yeah.
And I wasn't able to do that. And I had to go to another university where I was given a full scholarship. Now, the reason I bring that up is the Social Diversity Task Force was set up in order to give people from non-professional households the opportunities into senior leadership roles.
Yeah.
If you look at the FTSE 100, 89% of the CEOs all went to private schools. And if you conversely look at that, only 9% of the UK population go to private school. So with the Social Economic Task Force, the focus is really to try and reflect the boards to be more reflective of the UK economy in terms of being more diverse from a social economic point of view. So the focus is very much trying to get more senior positions of people from non-working backgrounds into FTSE 100 organizations.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you for sharing that. I thought it was important for my audience to see the wider context of what you do as well. So my next question to you is going to be around succession. What does succession look like for you as a leader?
That's a ninja question from a ninja himself. So that's another fantastic question. So Barrington Hibbert Associates has really had exponential growth over the last 2 years. And I've spoken to my management team, David, in terms of my next steps, but also the next steps for the organization. And I want to replace myself as a CEO. I want to move into more of a chair role and be involved, not just with driving the company forward from a relationship management standpoint, but I also recognize that my skill sets aren't necessarily geared to high growth. And when I sat down with my management team, they also acknowledged that their experience of taking us to another level in terms of growth from both a revenue and headcount standpoint isn't there. So we're actually in the market working with a search firm to find us a CEO to replace me and work with me at some stage. And from a succession standpoint, so the reason why I've answered that question honestly is because realistically, I've spoken to my team and no one feels that they have the ability to step up into my shoes. But also a number of my guys and girls have worked with me for a number of years. So they feel that a fresh approach is needed from a leadership standpoint. So in terms of succession planning, we've looked at it in terms of who takes over the mantle from me. And the view is that no one within the team were prepared to do that. And as a consequence, we're working with a search organization to bring somebody in who can take the firm into the stratosphere.
Hmm. How do you feel about that?
There's only so much I can share, but just in terms of my wife had a very bad illness, had cancer 2 or 3 years ago, and that was a game changer in terms of priorities. I mentioned to you about being at the desk at 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
and having the opportunity to spend time with my wife, nurse her back to health, and it's still ongoing, it just changes the dynamics in terms of what's important to you. Okay. Yeah. So again, in terms of, could I be that guy who could drive the company forward? Yeah, of course I can. This is my ego talking. Of course I can. Yeah. But do you know what I also like doing, David, on a Wednesdays, me and my wife driving to watch our kids play sports. Mm. And to do what I know the company can do.
Yeah.
They need Michael Barrington Hibbert from 10 years ago, who was 7 a.m. to 11, 12 o'clock at night, 3 hours sleep, boom, boom. I'm not that guy. My focus is still the firm, but my bigger focus is my wife, my kids, and trying to get that balance. So for me, I'm really comfortable with the decision, and I'll be able to look at my chubby face in the mirror and actually know that I've made the right call in terms of, I haven't left the business, but again, for me, I'm saying, hey, I'm taking the pause. I want to hang out and spend some time with my family and still keep my fingers in the business at the same time.
Okay, fabulous. Thank you for your honesty again. For those who you lead, what would they say you do well, and what would they say you can improve on?
I'm not leaving. Okay, I thought you said leave in, but no, leading,
for those,
okay.
For those of you who are leading, L-E-A-D-I-N-G.
Leading, okay. Well, listening is first thing I'm terrible at. So there you go. Look, I think it's and I would love you to walk me through this maybe, and it might be another time, is being big picture and being inspirational. My weakness is the detail. So I'll create big picture, and you know, if you know me, you'll understand what I'm talking about. Yeah, let's go, let's do it. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Michael, can you be descriptive in terms of how we'll do it? I said, well, okay, guys, you can figure it out. So that for me, so the detail, I spoke to someone earlier today. They said, look, you're sometimes you're not as patient as you could be when it comes to people getting it. I've got a really long list of things that I need to improve on, but I'm going to sort of publicly air those laundry out there. So it's enablement. So it's enablement initially. So I spoke to you about that when I first started up. There's still an element where I have to hold myself back and not get involved. And provide people the resources in terms of intellectual capital. So I still wrestle with that every single day of not picking up the phone and calling my COO and saying, look, what are the numbers looking like? But again, without the firm, I don't come from a wealthy background. I come from a wealthy background in terms of love and nurturing. But if this business stands still, again, which it happened 3 years ago for a variety of reasons, that's my body of work over 12, 13 years of blood, sweat and tears over with. So I'm unapologetic about the weaknesses that I have. And that's why I recognize that someone coming in who doesn't necessarily have that emotional attachment will be able to make better decisions for the company's long-term future.
Fantastic. My last question. I want to change it slightly. And I'm going to, I'm really touched by the comment you made about the family and prioritizing family. I'm very much like you. I'm like, I've always been, if I've got to make the different choice between my business and my family, why are you even asking me the question? Why are you asking the question? But I'd like to know what your legacy looks like. What's the kind of legacy that you want to build? So whoever's talking about Michael Barrington Hibbert in a few years' time, in 20 years' time, in 100 years' time, what's the legacy around your leadership that you want them to say?
Great question. I cared. Mm-hmm. I supported. and I uplifted.
Love that.
That's do you know something, David? And again, I'm mindful of your time. It's never been about financial. It's I've done okay from working in the city. I've done okay. That doesn't bring me happiness. Mm-hmm. What brings me happiness is people I've worked with, doing well, wealth-wise, health-wise. What I like about what I've been able to do is also paying it forward in terms of giving people opportunities. And again, I'm not going to plug stuff that I do, but that for me, the giving back component, my God, is better than buying a Ferrari car or anything like that. Just seeing, giving people chances, like I was given, like you were given. We're all given a chance, a support. And I think when you go through your journey, you'll look back and think, God, that teacher at school really liked me and they kept pushing me. Or that person at my first job. That for me is the piece which is really important, is giving back, giving opportunities for people to fully utilize their God-given talent.
I appreciate you, sir.
I appreciate you, David.
I appreciate you. This has been fun. I'm really glad that you were able to make the time. I'm going to be able to share this with my network and see the learning. And we will catch up. We are long overdue some food, so we will catch up, and I'll see you on the other side of this podcast eating some food somewhere.
Okay, as long as it's healthy.
Definitely, without a shadow of a doubt. Thanks again, Michael. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
The David McQueen Podcast is a Q Talent Management production. Theme music is Biscuit by Lacrimbo.